We're the big swinging Johnson, bro.
All right, this is Pure Decking Show number 271 for Thursday, I think. What day is today? Thursday the 3rd, sometime in August. Planet Earth, Dimension C-137, I think. May have fallen through a portal. Not worried about it. If I did, it's close enough. I'm Morps. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like poorly veiled Rick and Morty references, information security, pointing out just how rigged the fucking game is, and drinking so I can sleep. I am drinking some Bullet Bourbon Rye, discovering I really like just straight rye whiskey now. And tonight we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Maker's.
Also a good choice. Also an excellent choice. So, yeah, game is a little bit rigged. Might have a theme to some of the stories I've picked out tonight. Just saying. I don't know. What do you think, my man?
I'm looking at some of the stories, and I think you may have a problem with politicians this week.
Well, you know, when you're sitting there looking at the clock tower going, I could climb that.
Yeah, but did you really get the right rifle for it?
Oh, God, no. It's a 22. I mean, the only reason to shoot somebody with a 22 is to piss them off. But, I mean, I'm a good shot with it, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it's a 22.
Anyways. Yeah, you were going for depressing here. I went ahead and opened some of the links.
Oh, that was a mistake. You shouldn't have done that. Reading ahead. Anyways, so let's go ahead and get into the very first one. This is from NewStatesman.com. And Amber Rudd, who is a British politician, has been doing the media rounds this morning talking about the issues with end-to-end encryption poses to law enforcement. One particular comment caught basically everybody's eye. There's tons of stories about what she said here. Real people often prefer ease of use and a multitude of features to perfect unbreakable security. Who uses WhatsApp because it's end-to-end encrypted rather than because it's an incredibly user-friendly and cheap way of staying in touch with friends and family? This is a little bit like saying who uses a car because it has airbags and seatbelts rather than because it's a convenient way to get around. The home office strategy here may be to persuade internet companies to take action by telling them that ordinary people don't care about security, and that would be dangerous and misleading, although unfortunately it's probably true. Most people really don't give a shit unless it's pointed out to them. Then they get really upset when they figure out that they're not secure. You know, they want to be able to check the box and then ignore it. They don't actually want to do the work. Clearly, real people do value security in their communication, just as they do with safety in their cars. Security is not, or at least does not have to be, the opposite of usability. Where I lost my spot. Here we go. For many people, good security makes a service usable and useful. For some people want privacy from corporations, abusive partners, or employers. Others may be worried about confidential information, sensitive medical conversations, or be working in countries with a record of human rights abuses. That's the old Tor argument, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, we've created this fantastic service that's all darknet and hidden, and people can use it to sell drugs, but it's really for those third world countries where you get beheaded for saying the wrong thing, and it's nothing to do with the fact that you can buy drugs over there. You just happen to be able to do that, too. I'm refuting my own argument. I shouldn't be doing that, because
point out what it's a tool. It can be used for good things or bad things, You don't blame the hammer when someone bashes someone's head in with a hammer, because that hammer could have also built a house. It's the retard that's using it to bash people's head in that you blame.
You know, it's like Smith and, yeah. Smith and Wesson. No, we didn't make these to kill people. We made these to put holes in paper down the range.
And to kill people.
Well, and to kill people, but, you know.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, if somebody's trying to rape me in the ass, I want to shoot them in the face. It's
kind of hole for a hole. I mean,
it's
you know.
It's a hole for a hole.
It's like that Second Amendment conversation we were having the other day of, oh, now I get it. The point of the right of the people to bear arms is to regulate the militia. That's what it means.
But, yeah, encryption, it can be used for horrible things. It also prevents people from stealing my money when I use my debit card to get gas.
Right. The problem
That's
I
a
have.
Good thing.
The problem I have here is that you have a politician going around telling the public and technology companies, "Man, fuck encryption. You don't need it. It's just making our job harder." It's like, no, no. Encryption actually was a draw to WhatsApp. They made some headlines when they turned all that on. Because they went and they got the Signal protocol, if I remember right, and started using that. So, I mean, that was a big deal. But, I mean, just, again, this comes back to the it's too hard argument. You have these politicians whining and crying because they can't spy on you through your phone because you happen to use, an encrypted app, or they can't listen in on your conversations. Well, what the hell were they doing before? I mean, I guess opening everybody's mail, but... before technology existed, it's not like they could do all this spying and monitoring on you anyways. I don't think in the long term they've actually lost anything by encryption being available.
No, they have to do investigations.
So that's kind of my point with wanting to talk about this article is, I mean, of course you can have stupid politicians out saying stupid things. See the entire previous American election. But,
The Rock's gonna run for president, dude.
Who?
I just wanted to throw that out there. The Rock.
The Rock?
The Rock is floating running for president.
Why not? Fuck at this point. Actually, that's interesting. You'll have more celebrity politicians than you'll have real politicians before too much longer at the rate it's going.
We can bring back the concept of champions. Our president against your president. 2 out of 3 falls.
I would strangely be okay with this. And I'm willing to bet several other, like Putin and some of them South American dictators and some of the guys, they'd probably be down for that. It's like, what, no knives? Okay, well, why not? We've been invaded.
Oi. Wait,
what are you
doing? No,
okay.
No.
No. If you're invading, what are you drinking?
Water. Right now.
He's been taking pills. You've been taking pills, right?
I take pills every day, but that does. I just got home, so I haven't grabbed anything to drink yet.
All right. Well, you've missed all the links already. So first one up, Amber Rudd is telling companies they don't need encryption. She's a British politician, apparently well-placed. So, kind of ticked me off.
You don't need encryption. What's the argument? Why?
Yeah, because it's more important to make it user-friendly so that they can, to give the government the ability to monitor terrorists.
To monitor their own people. Got it.
Yep. They want to spy on people.
No, they don't want to spy on their people. They want to spy on our people. We're spying on their people. Then we get to trade notes later on.
Yeah, no.
What?
So if there's no encryption, the government can see. This is my opinion of this. While I fully agree with the fact that you need to spy on people because people do bad things and, whatever, what about the good people that don't do anything bad and, personal data security, medical information,
my debit card, My WoW account. Don't take my WoW account.
You spend too much time on that thing anyways, but... yeah.
All right, well, let me finish out the last couple of paragraphs of the article here, because these are kind of an interesting point. One risk is that users may start to distrust tech companies and the apps operating... Oh, so they're talking about the spying. Operating systems and the devices that they make. When security vulnerabilities are identified, firms push out updates to users. Keeping devices and apps up to date is one of the most important ways of keeping them secure, but if people are unsure whether or not they can trust pending updates, will they keep their devices up to date? And it would be incredibly damaging to UK security if large numbers of people were dissuaded from doing so. Prime example is the WannaCry ransomware that paralyzed parts of NHS in May. It spread through old Windows computers that hadn't been updated, forcing doctors to cancel thousands of appointments. You could argue that the WannaCry ransomware actually killed people because there were hospitals that shut down. Government must spell out its plans in clear, precise legislation, and subject to legislation to full power scrutiny, blah, 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 blah. So basically, the British government is going around dissuading companies from putting encryption in, and that ticks me off. Because, you know what? If I want to encrypt my messages, I should have the right to do that.
I don't think people need to know why I went to the doctor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you could have a really embarrassing cyst somewhere. I mean, nobody really wants to hear about that. No. That could be gross.
And then back to my financials. I don't have a lot of money, but it's mine, and I want to keep it.
Fair point. No, I think that's totally fair. So, not to mention... You know, maybe you want to keep what you're purchasing secret. Maybe you're into an embarrassing hobby. Or maybe you're... Well, hell, let's pick something nice in PC. Maybe you've decided to become trendy on Tumblr and start dressing in the opposite sex clothing, and you don't want your parents to find out. There's a purpose for encryption right there.
Or I don't want you guys to know who sent you the home circumcision dolls.
Wow.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Not really. I kind of think once you use it once, it's done, isn't it?
Nope. Comes with 10 reloads.
I could have been much happier in this life not knowing that. The fact that this thing is reloadable is just not right.
It's for practicing.
It's for a party.
In both senses of the word.
Yep.
Oh,
wow. As are most things that you all discuss.
No, this show is mostly about just getting screwed over. So.
Yeah, but play on words.
I wasn't the one who took it to the circumcision dolls. I'm just going to point this out.
I wanted to brighten the conversation. We're discussing the government thinking that my... payment history should be out there. It shouldn't.
You're brightening the conversation with blood splatter. Got it.
Hey, everyone laughed. I mean, Hitler
black
had
and white
his funny
and red
moments.
All over. Oh god.
But the downside of saying get rid of encryption, then if I try to pay my electric bill over my phone, everyone sees my debit card information or credit card information.
Yep.
Potentially, yeah.
I guess probably the one thing that I heard a second ago, I'm not sure if it was in the article or not, but you said that the doctors had to shut down and that potentially you could say then that the WannaCry virus killed people. So,
well, okay, now that's supposition on my part. WannaCry did shut down healthcare facilities in Britain. Large parts of NHS were affected. There were parts of it also in the United States that were affected, or hospitals in the United States were affected as well. So you could make the argument, it is supposition on my part, that right. ransomware killed people.
Right, right. And so to that point, though, because I know there's other people that probably are making that same argument, right, is the fact that there's two different topics there. One is encryption, period. Encryption, whether good or bad, depending on how it's used or not used, is irrelevant to the point of the WannaCry virus, in my opinion.
It is kind of. The way they linked it up in the article, and I skipped over that bit because we were talking about circumcision dolls. The way they linked it up was that they were talking about how the government, the UK government, is encouraging these companies to give them back doors, and like they want WhatsApp to give them a back door so they can go read people's conversations because they might be terrorists. And so the theory was that if you include updates that have all these back doors in it, word's going to get out about these back doors, and you're going to have people who will refuse to install updates on their machines because they think it's going to make things worse, or you know, add new back doors, not fix problems. And not updating your machine is, at least in today's world, a really bad idea, if you're on the internet at all, at least. Because, I mean, I suppose if you've got the air-gapped, you know, Windows 95 machine, well, actually, a Windows 95 machine probably wouldn't be too bad nowadays. But if you've got the air-gapped, you know, Windows XP machine sitting off in the corner and it never connects to the internet and all you ever do on it is type your book and print, you know, yeah, it's probably okay that you don't install updates. But if you're out there surfing the internet and you're using, you know, Windows XP SP1 and whatever version of Firefox you could get to run on that, you're probably in for a bad time.
I would agree.
So their point was that if you don't upgrade, we could have another WannaCry again. And to that point, you know, now a lot of the security articles are saying, get ready to migrate off SMB entirely. They keep finding flaws with it. So,
well, I will say this though, they have a point that there was updates that probably could have been pushed that would have allowed a lot of these systems not to be vulnerable.
Yes.
If Microsoft had actually released that these flaws were there, those people that say that, oh, Microsoft didn't even know, I think is a bunch of BS, too.
Of course Microsoft knew. They have agreements with half of these organizations. So,
another problem with adding a back door, the government isn't going to be the only one that can get into the back door.
That's always the case, man. So, I mean, somebody always seems to find it and then figure out how to get in it. 9 times out of 10, it's because the back door is the same across the entire platform. It's like, oh look, it's the word, it's 42 spelled out backwards. Gee, like that was hard to guess. I mean, I may or may not be referencing an actual digital signage system that I hacked into more than 7 years ago. So
nice.
I think statute of limitations. I had permission, mostly.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
That would be the alcohol. So, let's see. Next article, so the first one's kind of the discussion, so this one's like the first news article. Verizon, this is from Ars Technica. Verizon wants you to give up web privacy in exchange for movie tickets. I'm envisioning a web browsing bot just to generate tickets, but that point aside. Verizon Wireless is offering new rewards program that requires opting in to another Verizon program that shares customers' web browsing history with vendors and partners. The new program is called Verizon Up, a replacement for the similar Smart Rewards programs, and it lets customers earn a credit for every $300 they spend on Verizon Wireless products and services. Credits can be used to claim rewards such as streaming subscriptions, movie tickets, and discounts on device upgrades. So, in order to enroll in Verizon Up, customers must also agree to enroll in Verizon Selects, a targeted advertising program that shares one's internet and app usage history with other companies. App usage. I mean, yo, it's like, we're going to monitor everything you do with your phone, and we're going to send it to advertisers, and we'll give you points. And when you've earned enough points, you can get a movie ticket. Or maybe a discount on your next monitoring device. I mean, cell phone.
They'll see how many Daves I've spent throwing birds at piggies.
Verizon Select's been around a few years. The program's participation agreement specifies a long list of personal information that can be used to direct advertising at specific users. That includes web browsing history and other information that can be used to personally identify customers. We do not share information that identifies you personally outside of Verizon, as this is part of the program other than with vendors and partners who do work for us, the program says. We require that these vendors partners protect the information and use it only for services they are providing for us. So, standard non-disclosure agreement, businesses do that kind of shit all the time. The real problem here is that Verizon's collecting it in the first place. Vendors and partners remain unnamed. Well, I mean, I guess if you really don't give a shit about people, you know, like, everyone in the world knowing you what you do with your phone, and you want to get the movie tickets or the discounts, well, go for it. Personally, I don't like it. Personally, I think it's an invasion.
I don't have a problem with someone spying on me if they're asking, because then it's not spying. It's like, let me see what you're doing. This is what I will give you for that. It's a business transaction. If you can opt out, great. Let them do it.
I guess. I mean, I'm just thinking, how many kids take pictures of their junk with their phones?
This is true.
I mean,
Sexting is the thing.
There's a lot of shit that comes through on your cell phone that, you know, I buy things on my phone. I don't know about you guys. I use the Amazon app every once in a while. It's like, I don't care about some of these companies maybe getting some data on me. I just don't like the concept, you know, that everything I do on the phone is potentially monitored, you know, whether I want it to be or not, whether I'm getting bonuses for it or not. You know, I would never agree to this, and the fact that it is an opt-in is you know, good, but I don't know. It seems like a bad precedent to set. Oh, everyone's doing it, so, you know, it's just the way it works. So Ars Technica asked Verizon what vendors and partners it shares information with and what those vendors and partners do with the information. The spokesperson did not answer the question directly, but pointed to a Verizon privacy policy that says that Verizon shares information with our family of companies as well as with vendors and partners. Except as blah, 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 does not sell, license, or share information that individually identifies customers with others outside of Verizon who are not doing work on Verizon's behalf or without your consent. Well, opting into that program is consent. We may share this information with our vendors and necessary to perform work on our behalf. Blah, 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 blah. Advertising companies provide aggregate business and marketing insights or share de-identified information. So they're using it to build marketing databases and sell that to marketing companies. Opting out of the information sharing prevents customers from using Verizon Up Rewards program. We give our customers choice and control. They have the choice to opt in and participate in the program. And if they do choose to participate, they have the choice to opt out at any time. So Verizon has been expanding its users of Select since completing its acquisition of Yahoo's operating business in June. Oh, I forgot Verizon bought Yahoo. That's interesting, actually. Yahoo and Verizon owned AOL were combined into a new company named Oath. The Verizon family companies, including Oath, offer a growing variety of free services that are made possible by advertising. Best advertising is something you actually want, and that is what we want to give you. Besides their 4-minute partner, Select shares customer information with Oath in order to target ads. Ads are delivered across devices and services you use via email, regular mail, or text when you have approved it. So the article goes on about what all they know, and you know, Verizon is still doing super cookies and some other monitoring. But so I think the real point of this article here is read the fine print on your cell phone contract and make sure you understand what you're agreeing to. If you don't care that they're monitoring your phone, then I guess take the rewards, right? But I personally do. I don't think it's a good idea, and I think it sets a bad precedent. So,
well, I mean, I can see a lot of been set and was set a long time ago with the rewards cards, like Kroger cards and shit.
That's true.
Precedents happened.
I don't like the. Well, okay. So Kroger knows that I buy toilet tickets every once in a while, right? Or, you know, what food I like to eat. Whoopty fucking do. Especially since I don't think I ever actually filled out the form for this particular card.
Scanned the card and then also paid with a debit card, credit card, or a check?
Oh, I'm sure I have.
Then you didn't need to fill out the form. They've already linked you.
And think about it. That information then could be turned around and given to your doctor.
Or your health insurance company, much worse.
Or your health insurance company, you're right. It's real funny. I mean, you know, speaking of that, it's like we bought groceries there for a while from Kroger, but then we stopped for a little while, and then all of a sudden, oh, look, here's coupons for stuff you normally bought.
Yeah.
I mean, targeted ads, it's there. I'm like you. I don't think we've
helped it out. Cycros is worried that they're tracking his purchases of zucchini and Vaseline there. So, I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, it's kind of personal stuff. You don't want that, you know, floating around in the ether.
I didn't need to know that about you, Sakros, but I guess I've said enough things you didn't know about me, so... I mean, I guess you were trying to scare the cats and grease their paws at the same time.
Now I'm envisioning a cat in panic mode doing the full running on ice thing. Not quite as bad as somebody drowning in their big gulp, but that was... Oh, as far as visuals from the last episode go, drowning in the big gulp has got to be up there. I mean... Okay. Next one up is from cbc.ca. It's a Canadian story, and it is great. Just absolutely fun. Finished pasting the link. Here we go. Cable giant steps up piracy battle by interrogating Montreal software developer and searching his home. Canadian cable companies have ratcheted up their war on privacy by launching a new legal battle. The effort has already seen Bell, Rogers, and Quebec's Videotron search a Montreal software developer's home and to interrogate him for more than 9 hours. The whole experience was horrifying, said Adam Lachman, founder of TV Add-ons and defendant in a copyright infringement lawsuit launched by television giants. It felt like the kind of thing you would have expected to happen in the Soviet Union. Telecoms and content creators Bell, Rogers, and Videotron began their piracy battle last year by filing a lawsuit against Canadian dealers who sell free TV Android boxes, devices that can be used to stream pirated content. They're suing the people making the device because it could be used to stream pirated content. Damn.
It can also be used to watch YouTube and pull clips from ABC that they throw up for free.
Damn, though. I mean, I guess because they're advertising it as a way of getting free TV.
Yep.
Let's see. Now the companies are also targeting Lachman and TV Add-ons, a library of hundreds of apps known as add-ons. Once downloaded on the Android box or a computer with added software, some of the add-ons, such as Exodus and One Channel, allow people to easily access pirated movies, TV shows, or even live television. In their statement of claim filed in federal court on June the 2nd, the plaintiffs alleged that by developing and making TV add-ons available to the public, Lachman contravened the Copyright Act. By simply making things... Wow. The suit includes a long list of programming allegedly made freely available via TV add-ons, including Bell's Game of Thrones and Rogers Sportsnet. In his defense, Lachman argues that TV Add-ons doesn't host pirated content, but instead connects users to sources already available online. So it serves as nothing more than a search engine. So, oh, Sakros apparently knows what Exodus is. I haven't even used it. Is it actually for piracy, or is it you being sarcastic there?
It depends on... It's a search engine if you can search anything. It's a pirate tool add-ons. If it's just going to be linking you to pirated content. I'm going to give that one to the authorities. So if I could use it to search anything, it's a search engine. If it's just directing me to, hi, here are some pirate channels, it's piracy software.
Well, where they're presenting it as a collection, you know, a way of easily finding tools for these TV boxes, right? So on June 9th, the telecoms got an Anton Pyler order, a civil search warrant that gives a plaintiff the fact that this even exists in Canada is crazy. A civil search warrant that gives a plaintiff access to a defendant's home, not the police, not a lawyer, the plaintiff, as in the person suing you can come into your home and search through your shit. Damn.
I don't know about home, but a place of business, there are discovery rules similar to that in the U.S., I believe. You're suing, like, Johnson & Johnson?
Mm-hmm. So, where was it? Yeah, so it gives the plaintiff access to defendant's home without notice to search for and seize relevant evidence before it can be destroyed. A federal court judge would later declare the Anton Pyler order in this case unlawful, but that was weeks after a group of men arrived at Lachman's store at 8 a.m. on June the 12th. Lachman says the group included a bailiff, two computer technicians, an independent counsel, and a lawyer representing Bell, Rogers, and Videotron. According to court documents, the group stayed for 16 hours, and the plaintiff's lawyer and independent counsel interrogated Lachman for more than 9 hours. Dude, the Seuss just showed up at his home, barged in, started searching through his stuff, sat him down on his own couch, and started giving him the 9th degree, right? He was given a break for dinner and to speak with his lawyer, who was present. Lachman was not permitted to refuse to answer questions, and his lawyer was not permitted to counsel his answers. Okay. I mean, I know it's Canada, but damn.
Those last two are honestly the only problems I see, because the whole 9-hour questioning, we do that if you don't tell the cops to stop. You have to actually proactively, you know, opt out in that situation.
Yeah. Let's see here. Anytime I would question the process, they would threaten me with contempt of court proceedings, said Lachman. Besides seizing personal items, such as his computer and phone, Lachman says the plaintiff's lawyer and independent counsel forced him to hand over passwords for his email and social media accounts. But on June 9th, Lachman had reason to be hopeful he'd get his possessions back after a federal court judge declared the Anton Pilar order null and void, and that all seized items to be returned. According to court documents, the judge said the search was supposed to be conducted between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m., but instead lasted until midnight. The judge also said the defendant was treated unfairly during the interrogation and wasn't offered any of the protections normally afforded to litigants in such circumstances. He added that the most egregious part was the questioning, when the plaintiff's lawyer asked Lachman to spill information about other people running operations similar to TV add-ons. Oh, geez. The Psychros, it didn't get my bad joke about the 9th degree. 3rd degree is legal. 9th degree is not, because you're ratcheting it up by a factor of 3. Anyways, the judge said the purpose of the order was to preserve existing evidence, not to hunt for new evidence. He also concluded that the plaintiff's legal team used the order to try to shut down TV add-ons. I am of the view that the true purpose was to destroy the livelihood of the defendant, deny him the financial resources to finance a defense to the claims made against him, the judge wrote. The defendant has demonstrated that he has an arguable case that he is not violating the Copyright Act, the judge continued, adding that by the plaintiff's own estimate, only about 1% of Lachman's add-ons were allegedly used to pirate content. So it's not even a major part of his tool, it's just because it's there. No returns. However, Lachman's belongings still have not been returned, nor can he access the TV add-ons website or its social media accounts, which were also seized as part of the original order. That's because Bell, Rogers, and Videotron have appealed the court decision, and a federal court of appeal judge has ruled that until the appeal can be heard, Lachman gets nothing back. The appellate judge said the issue wasn't the fact that the number of alleged copyright infringing add-ons is small, but rather that TV add-ons targets a market of users seeking to knowingly access copyrighted materials without authorization. The plaintiff's law firm, Smart and Bigger.
They're compensating for something.
It sounds like it's spelled like their names, but yeah. said it couldn't comment on the case at this point and that the appeal hearing will likely take place this fall. As for Lachman, he plans to continue his defense. At this point, there is no other choice but to fight, he said in a written statement to CBC News. Help pay his legal bills. He's set up an Indiegogo. He's also set up new TV add-ons website and Twitter account and tells CBC News that his add-ons are still up and running. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think if you're running purely pirate software, you're kind of running a risk. I don't think this dude was. I think he was just, you know, he saw a platform, put out a tool for it. It's kind of like a search engine that it's probably just correlating a whole bunch of other software that's floating around out there. You know, for example, just as a for example, I use a server at home called Unraid. It's sold as a NAS to other stuff, and there's add-ons for it. Basically, give you an application catalog that's pretty much hosted off GitHub, if I remember correctly. And you can download things like Sickbeard and some other tools for like doing automatic newsgroup and torrent downloads and some other stuff. And you know, are they going to go sue Unraid? No, Unraid makes a legitimate product that several businesses use. Are they going to go sue GitHub? No, of course not, because you can prove that. But I could see them pulling some of the projects down, but I don't see them going after the service that's hosting them, and that's kind of what they're doing to this guy. Well, he's not even hosting. He's linking.
I think something that's a little bit more probably on par is like my Amazon box is I have the ability to basically, I don't know what it's called, but I've installed an app on it to where I can watch TV I shouldn't be able to get otherwise, right? It's not part of the initial load, and a lot of it probably is pirated at that point.
It depends on what TV you're sideloading. It's like I've been getting back into Babylon 5. There are a couple ways I can watch this. It's actually on the CW's website for free. So if I have just an app on a Fire Stick that goes straight to that website so I don't type in a URL or anything and just starts playing, that's fine. I'm getting my media from a legit source. But if I'm going to somebody who's just ripped their DVDs and tossed them on a server somewhere, that's a bit piracy-ish.
Yeah, that's what this is.
Well, I've seen some TV apps for Amazon or the Fire Stick and all that stuff where it is just going to different websites that are legitimately hosting this shit.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
There's a lot of free stuff if you want to take the time to look that's completely legit and you could watch online.
In this case, I honestly think it was just that they could figure out who this guy was. They probably couldn't track down a lot of the add-on makers. So, I don't know.
On this, if they're not going after the Fire Stick, whatever his apps are on, but he's the actual app maker that's putting out the pirate stuff, they might actually be going after the right guy this time.
Hard to tell. That's kind of the problem with this stuff. I don't know that I like the idea that the cable companies came in, searched this guy's home, took all of his computers, and interrogated him for 9 hours.
I think the issue is shutting down his business until before he's found guilty. I do think that's an issue.
That's definitely an issue.
But getting copies of the files, if it was done with a warrant and done legitimately, I don't really see an issue with that. But they shouldn't be able to shut down his business itself until it's proven that his business has committed a crime.
Yeah.
But this Canada we're talking about.
Well, I'm going with moral rather than legal. It may be legal. Just going from a moral aspect.
Well, no, even their own judge was like, dude, this is fucked up.
The judge said it was fucked up on the length of time that they interrogated him. The warrant was only for 8 to 8. They went to midnight. Which also shows that the system's working. The warrant was thrown out. Hopefully it stays thrown out on appeal.
Yeah. All right, next one up is from Ars Technica. A class action complaint against Comcast can move forward after a federal judge rejected a Comcast motion to dismiss it. The lawsuit, filed in October of 2016 in U.S. District Court in Northern California, accuses Comcast of falsely advertising low prices and then using poorly disclosed fees to increase the amount paid by cable TV customers. Those fees are the broadcast TV fee, which has increased from $1.50 a month to $6.50 since 2014, and the regional sports fee that rose from $1 to $4.50 since 2015. These fees are not included in the advertised prices, so customers end up paying higher prices than the ones they are led to believe that they will pay, the lawsuit said. When customers question Comcast about the fees, Comcast staff and agents explicitly lie by stating that broadcast TV fee and regional sports fees are government-related fees or taxes over which Comcast has no control. Comcast has filed a motion to dismiss, claiming that the order submission process could not have been created a contract, and that customers agreed to pay the fees in the subscriber agreement and minimum term agreement. But the U.S. District Court Judge Vince Chihabra disputed Comcast's reasoning and wrote the class action plaintiffs have made plausible errors or plausible claims. In the order, the motion to dismiss the breach of contract claim is denied. The plaintiffs have alleged the existence of a valid contract from which was created when Comcast customers Dan Adkins and Christopher Robinson submitted their order for Comcast services through Comcast's website. It is plausible to infer from the complaint that by clicking submit your order, Adkins and Robinson agreed to pay Comcast their advertised price plus taxes and government-related fees in exchange for the services Comcast offered them. It's also plausible to infer that the complaint that Comcast breached its agreements with the plaintiffs when it sent them the bills, charged them for broadcast TV and regional sports fees, alleged to be neither taxes nor government-related fees in excess of the agreed-upon price when it subsequently sought to raise the amount of the fees. So the agreement does not mention specific fees. Chiapra disputed Comcast's claim that the customers agreed to the fees in the subscriber agreement. The agreement refers only to permitted fees and cost recovery charges and not specifically the broadcast TV and the sports fees, he wrote. As to the minimum term agreement, the plaintiffs plausibly allege that they never saw this agreement at the time they submitted their order for services, nor have they ever consented to it. The judge wrote, whether the plaintiffs had access to this agreement at the time they submitted their order for services or whether they subsequently consented to it are disputed factual questions more appropriate for a summary judgment. Comcast argued that the order submission does not create a contract because of the integration clause contained in Comcast subscriber agreement, the judge wrote. The integration clause says that the subscriber agreement and other documents constitute the entire agreement. While the subscriber agreement discusses a subscriber's agreement to pay the cost of the services generally, it does not appear to contain any terms pertaining to any particular price the plaintiffs allege they agree to pay for services they ordered. It is therefore questionable whether the alleged order submission contract and the subscriber agreement pertain to the same subject matter. The plaintiffs also adequately allege that a reasonable consumer would be misled about the price of the service going through Comcast's ordering process. Jobber gave Comcast a partial victory in yesterday's order, dismissing the plaintiff's claim for implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. This was dismissed because the theory of breach of the plaintiff's allege is the same breach as contract theory. The claim is therefore superfluous. The judge's decision allows plaintiffs to continue pursuing the attorney's fees and punitive damages, but the judge warned plaintiffs that they will likely have to file a separate state court action in order to seek injunctive relief that would force Comcast to change its practices. The judge previously removed six out-of-state named plaintiffs from the suit, finding the court lacked jurisdiction to resolve their claims. So, pretty much, Comcast has been making up fees and then tacking them onto their contracts, and somebody's actually tried to sue them for it, and the judge is like, yeah, no, but you might have something here. So, I'm interested to see the outcome of this one.
That's not the Comcast getting sued that I was hoping it was.
What was the Comcast getting sued you were hoping it was?
I was hoping it was a ruling on the Google suit from Louisville or Nashville.
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh, that would have been good.
That's all going to be settled out of court. You know that's going to be settled out of court.
No, I'm going to have faith in Google's greed. Google wants to break into this market. Their greed will protect us.
Yeah, and their greed is why it's going to be settled out of court. They're going to agree to some kind of a cost sharing or just somebody's going to pay a fee, and then it's all going to disappear. So
make more money if they break the back of Comcast. Sacrifice it on the altar of the old gods.
Well, okay, we all know you keep an altar handy at all times, but the rest of us, on the other hand...
Mine's in the shop.
I don't know where mine is. I don't use it that often, so... Anyways,
Yeah, have you ever tried to order... Well, you probably have, but looked at cable prices online?
They're very different from what you actually end up paying if you call them.
Yeah, I had that argument with my cable provider. It's like, I'm looking at your website. It says $45 a month for cable only. That's what I want.
Like, yeah, you can't have that.
Like, it's $63, sir. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Did they pull down the Velcro flaps over their nipples and start rubbing them as they,
It was over the phone. I'm assuming they were just full on masturbating.
Yeah. So, All right. Last article for last news article, anyways, from The Verge. Apple is the largest company on Earth by market cap, and its success is derived from selling brand new high-end smartphones consistently more month after month. And at the peak of its iPhone business back in 2015, Apple sold a staggering 231.5 million smartphones. Those sales have begun to slow. That one device alone still accounts more than 50% of Apple's entire business. The company's second quarter earnings results for 2017, reported on Tuesday, showed that a quarterly profit of $8.7 billion, a majority of which came from the sale of 41 million iPhones. One of the reasons Apple can sell so many new devices is that we keep tossing aside our old ones, either because the battery life has grown worse or a new, more advanced model just came out. Advocacy groups say that this is by design and that companies like Apple are keeps supposedly neutral standards bodies from implementing environmentally friendly measures that could increase device longevity and cut down the number of new units manufactured. Apple isn't alone here, but the iPhone has become emblematic of this mindset and what environmentalist groups consider excessive wastefulness. The company makes it difficult to repair its products by using proprietary screws, unibody enclosures, and other manufacturing and design techniques that make it so that only Apple or computer repair experts can take them apart. The company also makes it notoriously difficult to replace its batteries by gluing them to other components and burying them beneath layers of complex sensitive parts. Instead, Apple incentivizes consumers to trade them in or discard models that are just 18 to 24 months old for new ones. You know, so now there's a new report out today from a group called the Repair Association details how the tech industry, through practices like fighting repairability, has undermined and openly combated green technology standards that would cut down on manufacturing waste. Authored by Repair Association board member Mark Schaffer, who runs environmental consultancy, the report lays out how Apple, HP, and other manufacturers use their outsized influence over the groups who regulate the manufacturing of electronic devices. These companies, which the report says effectively get to decide how their environmental practices are regulated, then get to slap gold certification labels on their products, all while ignoring pressing issues like repairability and usability. So this comes back to the right to repair laws. I'm not going to finish out the article because it's kind of long. But, you know, and Apple is probably the worst offender of this across their entire product line. They are certainly not the only one, especially if you want to get outside of the tech industry and to include things like, you know, cars, where good luck repairing a modern car if you don't take it back to the manufacturer. It can be done, but usually it's a pain in the absolute rear end. And worse, if you ever do have to take it back to the manufacturing garage after having an unauthorized repair done, they're going to double your price. And if you had any warranty, they'll tell you it's void.
Well, generally, if you have a warranty, that's the only time I ever really know of people going to the dealer for. Because it's cheaper to go to another mechanic.
And usually, but that's assuming the other mechanic can actually work on the car, which is getting harder and harder.
Yep. I don't know of a mechanic that can't work on most modern cars.
You obviously haven't had to buy parts for a modern car lately. Yeah, they can do it, but you're paying $300 for something that should cost $50.
Yeah, the cost of parts are, but those get generally cheaper after about 4 or 5 years. Because if you're doing something that's this year or the last 3 years, the parts are still coming from the actual manufacturer rather than a third party.
So I had a 2008 vehicle that, what was it, the boot needed to be replaced on the axle or something. Anyways, couldn't replace just the boot, even though, you know, it technically could be replaced. Had to be the whole thing. And where did they have to come from? Oh, it had to come from the manufacturer.
No one was building the boot yet?
This is a 2008 vehicle.
That's what I was asking. No third party was building the boot yet?
I guess not.
The alternator that's currently in my car, it's a new alternate. Well, it was new when I bought it, but it wasn't from GM.
So, you know, getting away from automotive a little bit, you know, look into tractors. They have the worst problem. They can't even repair the things that they otherwise
can't.
Because the sensors go nuts. Yeah. You know, most car manufacturers or most car mechanics will at least know how to reset the computers in them so that they can get around those kind of shit. But like tractors, they were actually we've talked about, you know, the stories of all of hacked firmwares just to get around this bullshit. So back to the article though, Apple's, you know, they're alleging that Apple's intentionally making it impossible to actually repair or upgrade their units, and you know, like I said, they're not the only one doing it. But
they are, and there's a good reason why.
Yeah, they want to sell you a new one instead of fixing the old one.
Well, they want to sell you a new one, number one. Number two, they put it back into their system, and they repair it, and then they sell it on the used market. So now they're double dipping.
Oh, sure. And, you know, you are not getting what they're getting out of that used market. You know, you trade it in for $50 off of a phone, they turn around, they're going to sell it for $200 to $300. But more than that, you know, you take, I don't know how many people have had to deal with Apple. Generally, if you bring a device to Apple to be repaired, any data on it is going to be gone. Like, you bring in, you know, there are horror stories all over the internet. They bring, you know, somebody brings in their MacBook with their life's work on it. And, you know, because the screen's cracked or, you know, something's wrong with the keyboard. And they get it back and the hard drive's been formatted. And they call up Apple and they're like, you formatted the hard drive? Yeah, you know, that's standard practice. We do that. No matter what. So.
That's fucked up.
Oh, no, they tell you this, they're probably going to format the hard drive. And in a lot of these laptops, it's not like older school laptops, PC laptops. I guess it depends on whether. I guess it's not old school. It just depends on it. You can usually pull the hard drive out, pop it in the dock, and clone it right on another machine. Not on most Macs. They solder the damn things in. Although. To be fair, if the Mac is working, you can usually use a target disk mode like a FireWire cord, but or I guess it's Thunderbolt now. But you still, you know, if the machine's not working, you generally don't have any way to get your data back. So hope you have backups, because if you take it to Apple to get repaired, you're probably going to lose your stuff. But yeah, and they're not the only ones. Samsung's bad about it too. You know, you ever tried to swap a screen on a Samsung phone? Actually, no. We did try to swap a screen on a Static's iPhone at one point. I think at one point we were using like a straight razor and
yeah,
you know, whatever other improvised tools.
It was successful.
We successfully did it. But it was just crazy what all we ended up doing to get that screen swapped.
Yeah. I think the worst part was trying to get the thing apart to start with.
Mm-hmm.
On my LG, I'm pretty much just going to be buying a new one probably in a week. Shattered its screen.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Put a case on it.
The new one will. Although, I may swing by one of these phone repair places and just see if it's even doable.
They'll want $100 to do it, probably.
$100, I'll buy a new one.
So I've got an S3 with a busted screen that I've been intending to repair for like 2 years now. And yeah, I've even got one of the screen kits off eBay. I just haven't sat down taking the time to do it because I got to take a heat gun to it to get the touch screen off of the broken glass. And I just, yeah. Anyways, I don't know that I'll ever actually repair it, but I took it to a repair shop. They wanted $200 to fix it. I'm like, $200? I'll just get a new phone. Oh, fuck. So, you know, they make it economically impossible to repair a device that would otherwise be serviceable because you busted the screen, you know, for example. So, I mean, not to mention they I mean, Apple won't ever own up to it, but I'm pretty sure that when you put the new, you know, the updates on some of the older devices, they're intentionally slowing them down. At least the last update they usually do for that device. I have an iPod Touch 5. Or 6. So it's the generation before the last generation Touch. And I made the mistake of letting it update, just not thinking about what I was doing. So, oh, update, yeah, okay, whatever. It's unusable because the last update slowed it down so badly.
Intentionally bricking, I think, is crap. But what do you actually think is a fair amount of time before you start letting any proprietary components go into public knowledge? Because that's pretty much what has to happen for it to be repairable by a third party, at least as far as manufacturing part.
Well, if we're talking about the spec boards and the components, I mean, certain parts of it never are going to get published. You know, Apple's chip, that they're using because they manufacture their own ARM-based chip, the A-line, whatever it's called. That's probably never going to get published. But things like the dimensions for the screen so that third parties could manufacture replacement screens, I don't know, a couple years? Seems fair. Or just let the manufacturers they buy the screen from sell them, you know, to third parties that want to do repairs.
I think that's probably more in line with what they actually do.
Well, no, right now they don't let anybody. Usually the screens are pulled from busted devices.
Or, got to make them worth their weight in gold. The screen's usually the thing I see broken on a phone.
Exactly. They buy up the old stock and... You know, like, you know, parts companies, like the places that do screen repairs in the mall, that's what they do. They buy up old stock of phones, just, you know, the old used ones, just so they can get the things like the screens and certain circuit boards out of them. Because you can't buy a replacement part. So, it's nuts, but, I don't know, because you do kind of run into that weird line, right? Like, you know, the way they design their phone, if you force, you can't exactly force them to give out the electrical, their, like the circuit designs. But I kind of feel like when they've end of lifed it, they should. I don't know how, I mean, it's a moral thing, right? So I don't know how you reconcile that with any kind of a law or regulation.
If you're not servicing it and I still own it, I should be allowed to repair it.
I think that, yeah, that's a fair statement. I just don't know how you practically apply that idea.
Well, you'd practically have applied is once you see servicing a product, it becomes public domain.
Yeah, so you can't sue anybody for reverse engineering it.
Yeah.
Maybe
you've
not
given up on
to...
that product. You're no longer making money off of it once you say, I'm no longer servicing it.
But what if there are components of that product that are being used in a new product that you made?
Well, then it gets confusing. So I guess you don't have to.
Well, that one I could see it with the ARM chip being moved forward.
Yeah,
but the
you can't require them to publish their designs because that gets weird. But I maybe just prevent them from going after somebody who's taking the old one apart to figure out how to make their own. I don't know. Yeah, because you're right. I mean, even the chip designs don't change that much from model to model. Yeah, see, I don't know. Because I feel like I should have the right to repair a device, whether I want to go back to the manufacturer who made it or not. Because it's my device. I should be able to do whatever the hell I want with it, and that includes fixing it with a soldering iron and parts I got off eBay. Then I ought to be able to do that. But, you know, they intentionally make that really hard.
If you push for the manufacturer to allow the vendors that actually make the components to sell them openly, then you're not compromising their design, and people that want to repair their iPhone 1s can still get the parts to do it.
Well, I mean, like, but you said, the screen, or like Cycross is saying in chat room, the power ports, these are the kind of things that, you know... Go ahead, Static. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. I was just going to say, what about brand integrity, though? That's what a lot of brands will focus on. Is the fact that if I let some third party start making this replacement screen, for instance, versus me selling a screen that is new, okay, you know, there is a difference, possibly in the quality control that one company went through versus the other.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point of a brand. You can either buy a branded replacement screen from the manufacturer. The problem is they don't sell them. That's the real problem. If the manufacturer sold replacement parts, I don't think this would even be an issue for a lot of this stuff, but they don't. Like, I can't go to Apple and, like, I've got an old S6 or iPhone 6, not an S6. And it's like, if I had busted the screen and I couldn't go to Apple and say, hey, I'd like to buy a replacement screen for my phone, they'd say no. We don't sell that. You know, you can trade it in for a modern phone, or you can, because it's, you know, it's a couple of generations out of date now, or, you know, tough titties. And, you know, so you go on eBay and get parts or whatever and do it yourself, but then you're taking the phone apart and you're back using the straight razor and the heat gun, right? So, but at the same time, you know, Yeah, if you know that you, it's not like somebody can say this is a genuine Apple screen that we have remanufactured. No, no, no. No, at that point, it's not an Apple. It's they made their own, so you're buying an off-brand. You should know you're buying an off-brand. But you know that's I think part of the problem is you can't go get a genuine Apple brand replacement screen from Apple. Anyways, I guess you can buy a busted phone off eBay and take the parts out. But even then, they've got parts of the phone. Now, there's good security reasons for this, but like the fingerprint sensor in iPhones, if you try to switch it, will never work. Because they lock it to the chip, if I remember correctly. So like if you bust the home button and you switch it with a part off of a another phone, it doesn't work anymore. Like the fingerprint sensor doesn't work anymore because it's not the one that's registered to that chip.
Oh, that way no one can stick a fingerprint sensor that's just designed to say it's okay.
Yeah, that's true. And like I said, there's a good security reason for that one, so I'm not going to condemn them on that one. But it is kind of frustrating to not have any kind of a workaround available to people doing repairs for that kind of problem. So I don't know what the answer here is. I'd like to see a way to repair older devices or even just devices with busted screens without having to go back and deal with the rigmarole of, you know, the bullshit they put you through or replacing devices or stuff like that. Because, yeah, you think about how often most people switch cell phones. It is pretty wasteful. I'm not big on the whole environmentalism movement, but, yeah, it is actually pretty wasteful if somebody's buying a new phone every 18 months. And, you know, the old one's just getting trashed because they keep busting the screens or whatever, right?
I'm doing my part to save the planet, guys.
Okay, nobody cares about
the phone until it catches fire.
No, nobody cares about you, you know, pissing into a jar and running your own compost.
That's kind of terrible.
Oh, fuck. So like I said, I don't know what the answer is. There may not be a good answer here because I get, you know, Static's got a very valid point of this IP has value. You know, it's not like the iPhone design has changed much from the original model. I mean, seriously, compare an iPhone 1 to an iPhone 8. 8 is the current model, right?
It's 8's coming out.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, fine. Compare an iPhone 1 to an iPhone 8. What's different? Higher resolution screen, faster processor, same basic shape, a little bit larger phone. What else is different?
Compare a 1 to a 7.
Okay, compare a 1 to a 7. What's different?
Depending on if they get the 8. The 8, drastically different. You know.
Okay, I guess I'm out of touch, but okay.
So it's a quality for at least. But yeah, no, you make a valid point. You're right. There's not been a lot that has changed, and that's kind of one of my things, too.
It's been iterative improvement. I'm not arguing that. But
yeah.
I mean, I think they have they added new... They've got that 3D touch thing. Seriously, I'm trying to think what else is significantly different between other than just faster processor, better screen, better cameras.
Edge to edge glass, dual cameras versus single cam. You know, the design layout's a little different, so.
Yeah. They got rid of the headphone jack.
Yep, no headphone jack.
Oh, yeah, they got rid of that.
Different, yeah, so different power port.
Yeah, different power port. But, I mean, it's a valid point. So I get the whole idea of needing to protect your IP. And I don't know what the answer here is because at the same time, I should not be prevented from repairing a device I own. So I really don't know what the answer to this is. But I'm going to move on because we're already running long and I feel like we're just rambling. Time for this. Is that the right Digital Dojo?
It said Hadouken.
I feel like I played the wrong one. I don't know what the right one is, though. Doesn't matter. Been drinking. To forget. Anyways, so The first thing I have for Digital Dojo today is, of course, the DEF CON link to all of their media. Presentations, files, and such from the DEF CON presentations from last week. So they posted all this stuff up on their website. So you can go get all the information off their talks, the slide decks, PDF files, and the like. And always good to have, especially after the DEF CON conference and the Black Hat conference. So that's always great. And the other thing I have for Digital Dojo tonight is an Android app I've been playing with and I am finding extremely useful. It's called DeskDock. They've got a free version and a pro version. The free version is a little bit limited in that you don't really get to forge it. I don't think it forged your keyboard events. When I was playing with it, it seemed like that was the limitation. The pro version, which is $5, is synergy for an Android device. So like if you have an Android phone or an Android tablet, you hook this thing up to it, you can mouse cursor over to it like you would with Synergy and type on your Android device as though it was just part of your PC. And you can cut and paste back and forth between the two. You've got some different options about screen placement and the like. But I mean, it's just a really nice way to use a keyboard and mouse on your Android by tethering it up to your PC. And it tethers with the USB cable, so it's also sitting there charging the whole time, and it works across Mac, Linux, and Windows. So, I mean, it's pretty useful, just for moving data back and forth between the phone or the tablet, or if maybe you've got different applications across them, like you've got, say, a soundboard on your tablet, and you just move the mouse cursor down there, and you know that way it's one way to hit your sound effects. And because I was playing around with using a Nexus 7 as a replacement soundboard instead of the mess I use today, although today's design's not bad, because I've been exploring different options for the broadcast box, trying to neaten it up, find better ways to do it, and so far I'm still at the 2 sound card with a loopback cord, mix, and TeamSpeak, but I was playing around at least with some other options, and I just happened to stumble across this really nice little app. So I do recommend that, especially if you do a lot with your phone. And I did say doo-doos for anybody keeping track. And it's useful just because you get a mouse cursor on your phone, and it's your regular mouse. You just mouse over to it like it's a... Well, if you've ever played with Synergy, you'll immediately know what it is. So... that said, that's all I've really got for tonight. Listen, the stream, we're always working on it. Galaxy15radio.com is the website. Hop in the IRC. Who do we have in the IRC today? Myself, Sard, who's probably not there. CyberLard, who I haven't seen say anything, but I know he's there because I saw him talking earlier. Cycros twice because I think his main box crashed and he's back on his mobile. Iron Angel and Madman is in the IRC tonight. So that's all I've got. I can't call it future news because Sard will beat me up. Madman, closing thoughts.
I can't wait for our president to be a pro wrestler.
Static closing thoughts.
I need to go get a drink.
Excellent thought. Excellent thought. That's all I've got for tonight, so I'm going to play the closing noises.
Hands or Zakat. Hands or Zakat. Hands or Zakat.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
Thank you, Thymaster.